Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever time of the day it is that you're listening to this program. Welcome to Philadelphia Eagles Talk with Jeff. Training camp is underway. I am now freshly back, those of you who listened to my last couple of podcasts, from Atlantic City down in New Jersey, where I was at the 42nd annual National Sports Card Convention. Met a lot of former Philadelphia Eagles. We'll be definitely talking about that, as I promised. And you know, some news are starting, you know, start coming out of camp now that it's about a week underway. Starting to get little bits and pieces and some takes about how things are going, how certain players are looking. And I'm going to cover that and talk about that on today's program. We're also going to talk about the fact that the numbers continue to climb, so you can just tell football's in the air as you're tuning in. You know, my numbers are going up. I actually broke back into the top 60, which is pretty good. You know, last year I got into the top 25 a couple of times in terms of the number of all these sports-related programming on in the podcasts. I broke into the top. I don't know if I got into the top 25, but I was in the top 30, so I was in the 20s. And it happened a couple of times. A lot of time was in the, you know, around the 50 range. Well, just to let you guys know, I want to keep you informed, full transparency on this. You know, I got inside, I was around 57 or 58, I believe, heading into last week. And then currently I'm like 60, right around the 60 mark. So not bad. You know, when you consider all the sports podcasts that are out there, you know, this one's, you know, we're doing we. And I say we because this is nothing without you, the listener. So, and I really mean that. So thank you again for tuning in and coming back to the program. I think we've got a fun and exciting season ahead of us, you know, and that's the part that's going to be fun, quite honestly, you know. So lots to talk about here as we get closer to camp. So, first of all, I think probably the most important news of it all, knock on wood, no major injuries to report. The Eagles are clearly taking it easy. This is not like the old Dick Vermeil days and Andy Reid days when they did two-a-days and, you know, did a lot of contact. The Eagles under this, and even under Doug Peterson, really, but Sirianni even takes it to a whole new level where they do even less, you know, actual physical contact. They do a lot of walkthroughs and a lot of in classroom time, and then we're out in the field, they do a lot of just kind of, I don't want to say going through the motions. There's a little bit of contact, but they're not tackling to the ground. And it appears that they may not tackle to the ground at all in camp at all, except for the, you know, the preseason games and I don't even know, maybe even when they do those joint practices with the Dolphins, I believe they are, and maybe the Patriots again. I think that they're doing the Dolphins, if I'm right, or maybe the Jets. I'm not even sure they're going to tackle to the ground in those games. Maybe not. I don't know. That'll be interesting to see how that all kind of rolls out as we move forward. But anyway, we're about a week in, and some good things that I'm hearing and some concerning things that I'm hearing. And I'm not going to put too much into it because, again, it's training camp, right? But, you know, the little bits and pieces and nuggets of information that you do get, we're going to talk about. And this is from good sources. I would never just, you know, have a discussion topic on something I just really was just hearsay from some, you know, fan or whatever. These are from inside good sources within the Eagles. And so we'll talk about that. But before we get into it, I will talk about and just touch base on my experiences at the National. I don't want to take too much time on it because this is Eagles talk, but this is Eagles related. I was able to meet three Philadelphia legends over the past weekend down in Atlantic City at the National Sports Card Convention. First of all, it was a huge place. I mean, this is a gigantic, if you've ever been to that convention center down there, and this was the first time I've ever been there, it is a monster facility. And as big as it is, there was not enough room. And I truly mean that. I mean, it was this, the sports memorabilia and collecting hobby is still in full swing. I mean, it kind of peaked during COVID, and it's showing some signs of tapering off. But I tell you, if it's an indication as far as the attendance at the convention, there was standing room only on 4 of the days that I was there. I don't know how it was on Sunday because I left on Saturday. But I was there from Wednesday to Saturday, every single day from beginning to end, nonstop, jam-packed, constant flow of people where, you know, there's probably 600, 700 tables of dealers. And, you know, of course, there's the corporate sponsors that were there too, like the Paninis and Tops. And, you know, they all had their, you know, own booths and setups. But, you know, you think about how many tables there are. And each table at peaks of the day, I wouldn't say like this, you know, the entire, you know, let's see, I guess 10 hours it was open each day. But, and a lot often, quite often during the day, it was 2 or 3 people deep in terms of the, you know, at each table. I mean, that's just how many people were. It was unbelievable. And then, of course, you had the autograph lines. And what I learned about this is I probably won't, even though I didn't think I selected too many. I mean, there was 150 athletes there over the course of the 5 days. And I narrowed it down to 5. You had to pay for each one of these. So, obviously, the budget comes into play when you're narrowing it down. But I had the opportunity to meet some Eagles legends and some just legends in general in the football and baseball world. And I mentioned a list, but I'll go over it with you again here in a minute. Especially with the Eagles. But, you know, the autograph lines, waiting in those lines, took a lot of time away from me being able to get out into the shows and really spend as much time, you know, out there shopping and picking up, you know, because I'm a collector. And so I guess I would have just liked to have more time to browse than I did. But so that was kind of a learning experience for me. And going forward, if I were to attend another national, I would not, you know, get 5, you know, athletes, because it just takes too much time waiting in line, and it just takes too much away from me having the time to really properly and have adequate enough time, because there's so many people to get to all the tables and just so many tables, you know, it's almost impossible to get to see everything. And I didn't even see probably half of the tables there. Actually, I know I didn't. So I was there for 4 days. Now, again, a chunk of my time was taken up waiting in these autograph. When I say autograph lines, it was really photo op lines. I didn't go in the autograph lines. Those were lines too. But I was in the photo op lines. I chose photo ops because a lot of these players already have their autographs. So I wanted to go through the photo ops and get my picture taken with them and get the, you know, meet them really quick and greet them and you know, have a, you know, share a quick, some words. And that was the experience that I was looking to get out of it. So we'll talk about that in a second. So, but yeah, just going forward, you know, just the amount of people there and the amount of dealers that are there and tables just to kind of browse through, I ran out of time. I just wasn't able to get to everybody because of waiting in these photo op lines for as long as I did, especially that Saturday. I mean, Saturday alone, that's when I had 3 players lined up. I waited in line the entire day. From about 10 o'clock in the morning to about 4:30, all I did was wait in lines for the photo ops. And that was just for 3 players. So that knocked out an entire day. All right, anyway. So let's get into it. So the 3 Eagles that I met, if you don't know from previous podcasts or you weren't able to tune into my last couple, I met Ron Jaworski, Dick Vermeil, and Randall Cunningham. And my experience with all 3 was extremely positive. You know, sometimes you hear little stories, and I got a couple of stories to share on the other athletes that I met that wasn't as, I won't say negative, but it just wasn't as, you know, you just hope that, you know, the guys, and I don't know if they care, you would think that they hopefully do care that, you know, we're not in line for free, you know, for these photos that we all had spent a little bit of money or a lot of money in some cases to, you know, get a picture taken and meet with these people. And the first one I met with the first day I got there was Ron Jaworski. And he signed a photo. Now, I did get his autograph because his is the only autograph line that I was in. So I didn't get my picture taken with him. I got an autograph as part of my VIP pass. I was able to do that. And I was able to meet Ron Jaworski. And he signed a 8x10 photo of himself, you know, obviously a game action photograph, and just a nice guy, you know, just being in line, watching him interact with the other folks in front of me, and then once myself, once I got up to him as well. Everything that I expected to, as far as how Jaworski was, he's a very personal guy, very nice. He did have his 1980 Super Bowl. Well, then he didn't win the Super Bowl, so it had to be his NFC Championship game. Or maybe it was I don't know if he was an employee of the Eagles, or maybe the Eagles gave him a Super Bowl ring. I didn't get a close enough look at it. It might have been. Maybe he did get a championship ring with the 17 team. I don't know, but he did have a gigantic Eagles ring on. My assumption would be it was the NFC Championship ring that he played in. It was, they lost the Super Bowl to the Raiders back in 1980. But maybe it was the Super Bowl ring. Maybe the Eagles gave it to him as a gift. I'm not sure. I think only employees get a ring. I don't know if past members get a ring. I don't know how that works. But I think you have to be a member of the current team or a employee of the Eagles in order to get a, you know, a Super Bowl ring. But I don't know. I mean, Jaworski obviously has still got a lot of connections to the team. So I don't know why I'm going off on a tangent on the ring. I'm just letting you know I noticed it. So it's kind of hard to miss it. So he signed the photo for me, which was cool. Got to meet him, which was cool. The following day, which would be Thursday, I got an opportunity to meet who to this day, and I talked about it on the podcast, is still my favorite all-time Eagles coach, and that is Dick Vermeil. When I first became an Eagles fan, Dick was the head coach, and so I've always been partial. I've always had a soft spot for Dick Vermeil. He's the one that helped onboard me as an Eagle fan back in the early 80s. And I've always, you know, again, he's my favorite Eagles coach. It just is, you know. Love Dick Vermeil. And just from watching him on TV, you just kind of expected him to be a really nice, genuine guy. And he is, out of all the athletes that I met, and, you know, athletes slash coaches in his case, he's the only one that was, like, really personable. Whereas he, like, you know, asked me some questions, commented. I had my Eagles polo shirt on with the Eagle emblem. And, you know, he's like, I like your shirt. And I said something like, yeah, I figured you would. And he put his arm around me, you know, in the photo. He's the only one that did that. So, again, super personable, very nice guy. Smiled, just smiling the whole time. Like, looked like he actually wanted to be there. Looked forward to meeting, you know, anyone who was in the line to meet with him. I can't say enough good things about Dick Vermeil. I congratulated him. I told him that, you know, he was the head coach of the Eagles when I first became a fan as a kid. And I congratulated him on making Hall of Fame this year. And, you know, he said thank you. And I swear, if I wasn't, you know, if there wasn't others in line, I probably could have sat there and talked to him. And he would have been perfectly fine with me just, you know, having a conversation with him and talking whatever. And I wish I kind of was able to talk to him longer, because he's just, you know, I love Dick Vermeil, and I'm so happy he got into the Hall of Fame. And it was just a experience that I'll never forget meeting him. He was definitely one of the highlights. Out of all the ones that I met, Dick Vermeil was one of the absolute highlights of the five, six, including Jaworski, that I met over the weekend. All right, so moving on to the next day, I met on Friday. I was lined up to meet Dave Winfield. Now, I know he's not an Eagle, but Dave Winfield, I played baseball for 10 years growing up, and Winfield was I was a Yankee fan, because, again, for those of you who may not know, I'm not from Philadelphia. Even though I'm a diehard Eagles fan from Connecticut, since I've been 7, 8 years old, and I've mentioned this from time to time on this podcast, really from the beginning, so you get my background. For baseball, and growing up in Connecticut, it's like either the Yankees or the Red Sox, really. And it's the only team, other than the Whalers. The Whalers left, as those of you may know are hockey fans, in 1997. And once the Whalers left, Connecticut has never had a professional team. And certainly they never had a professional baseball team. So, again, it was either Yankees or Red Sox when I was a kid growing up, and I was on the Yankee side. And Dave Winfield was my favorite player. And I tried to wear number 31 all through, you know, the minor leagues that I was played in, minor town leagues, what I mean, and then up through high school. I played and started in varsity. And I would always try to be number 31 if the number was available. I always tried to get it. And because, again, it was just a deference to Dave. Now, out of all the athletes that I met while I was there, Unfortunately, I have to say that the one that I would rank last, in terms of being personable and some of the things I was talking about that Dave Vermeil was, Dave Winfield wasn't. Now, I don't want this coming off as, you know, Dave was a jerk or, you know, he wasn't. He wasn't a jerk. It's just like, to me, and maybe it's just, you know, too high of expectations for being such a fan of Winfield. You just kind of like, you just want to kind of be reciprocated in some way. I mean, it may sound silly, but, you know, he was just very stoic. And because of COVID, I don't think he wasn't shaking hands. It sounds like, you know, he's 70 years old now too. But again, you know, I say that, but Dick Vermeil is way older than he is. And, you know, he didn't have a, you know, was shaking hands and put his arm around me and all this kind of thing. So, and I, actually he was the next one after Dick Vermeil. So I went from like two polar opposites where Dick Vermeil was super friendly and put his arm around me and smiled for a picture and had a conversation. And Dave Winfield was the exact opposite. Dave was, not that he wasn't friendly, but he certainly didn't go out of his way to strike up a conversation or he wouldn't even shake your hand. And this is not just me, he was bumping fists. So maybe he's, you know, concerned. I know everyone's got various degrees as far as their concern about COVID and catching it and whatnot. And obviously Dave is there, going to meet a lot of people that day. You know, maybe he just wanted to, you know, be extra cautious and not shake hands with everyone. So he did fist bumps. So I fist bumped him before the photo that I had with him, and I fist bumped him afterwards. And I just told him it was a pleasure to meet him. And, you know, he basically, I don't really know what he said. Maybe he said one word. He was just there to get, you know, get his photos taken and be on his way. And so it was still, again, it's not like he was a jerk. He wasn't being rude or, you know, an ass. Not saying that, but it just, for me, I was disappointed in just that he wasn't more personable, you know, but it's still a huge highlight for me that I was able to meet my childhood idol, that I was able to have my picture taken with Dave Winfield and to meet Dave Winfield. You know, so that was exciting. Now, all right, I know he's not an Eagle, so apologize for me going on a little bit of a Winfield tangent there. So the next day was the big day. That was Saturday. Saturday, I had three players lined up, and these were the big three. Again, not the slight Winfield. Well, I can't really say big three, but it was just, you know, three in one day. And that's why Saturday I just waited in lines the entire day. So those three were Joe Montana, Bo Jackson, and Randall Cunningham. So I'll start with Joe. It was funny because when I was sharing my story about Winfield with someone else who I was just talking to during the show, he mentioned to me that, you know, Joe Montana was kind of a jerk when him and his son went up to him. And so, you know, you always got to take these stories with a grain of salt. I mean, they're all human beings, and they all are entitled to have a bad day every once in a while as well. You got to keep that in mind. And he just shared me a story where him and his son, he had a football, wanted to get Joe to sign. Apparently, I think the way he said it was, Joe asked him if he had paid for the event or whatever. I don't really remember. I don't even know if I should share the story because I don't know if I can recall exactly what it was. But the bottom line is he told me that, you know, Montana refused to sign something for his son. And so I'm not saying it didn't happen. I just don't know what the circumstances were. And all I can say is that, so I guess I was kind of disappointed to hear that, knowing I was going to meet Montana the following day. And so I'm fast forward to Saturday here. So I'm in the line to meet Joe, and you know, the four or five, six people ahead of me, maybe there was more than a dozen people ahead of me. He had one of the longer lines, probably well over 100 some odd people for his photo op. And then, you know, God knows how many people he had for his autograph line. But I, again, was focused on photo ops because I already have Joe Montana's autograph. So I wanted to get my picture taken on him, just get a chance to meet and talk to him real quick. Now, so, and immediately, just as I was watching him with everybody else in the line, he was like extending his hands to shake hands and, you know, talking to everyone that was going up there. And so I'm like, oh, cool. So Montana's, you know, not, you know, the jerk that this guy was talking about. He's very personal. And again, I was coming off Winfield from the day before, who didn't do that at all. I was like, oh, cool, because I really wanted to, and I only mentioned this on my podcast last, I think it was previous podcast, to this one. Joe Montana and I share the same birthday, and not that that would mean anything to Joe Montana, but for me, it's always been cool to know that, you know, I'm you know, Joe Montana and myself share the same birthday, and also Vince Lombardi's birthday is also the same day as myself and Joe Montana's. So I wanted to somehow, you don't have a lot of time to talk to him when you're up there. You know, they're basically getting people through to get the pictures taken so Joe can go and get in the line to do his autograph signings. So you don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to figure out a way, as I was thinking to myself while I was waiting in line to get up there, how am I going to, you know, just kind of interweave this, you know, letting them know that, you know, we share the same birthday. Because I definitely just wanted to let him know. And then I knew he would, you know, why would he care about, you know, sharing the same birthday with me? I just wanted to know how cool it was that I, you know, shared the same birthday with him. But I also wanted to give him a nugget of information. So I'm like, I had to tell him also that we share the same birthday as Vince Lombardi. So I'm like, you know, hopefully maybe that he would have some interest in, you know, at least mildly, right? So I get up there, I shake his hand. I'm like, Joe, it's a pleasure to meet you. And so just before the photo, and I just said, listen, I just want to let you know. And I'm like, not that you would necessarily care about this, but I just want you to know that we share the same birthday, June 11th. And you know, he was kind of like getting ready to smile for the photo and everything as they were about to take the picture. And I said, but what you may be interested in is that we also share the same birthday with Vince Lombardi. And so then the picture gets taken. And then Joe says to me, he's like, you know, I did not know that about Vince Lombardi. He's not aware of it. And he goes, and I also was not aware that I shared the same birthday with you, or I share it with you, or something like that. Those lines. I'm like, I'm thinking, kind of chuckling to myself, thinking, thanks, Joe, for flattering me, for saying that, you know, because obviously, you know, he could care less, I'm sure, that he shares the same birthday with me. But he was very genuine, very nice, very personable. And the fact that I was able to let Joe know something that may or may not be interesting to him, he could have just been saying that, you know, he wasn't aware that Vince Lombardi had the same birthday as him. I really truly think that he did not know that, that's for sure. But, you know, hopefully, you know, he now shares that going forward with people that, you know, that he now knows that he shares the same birthday with Vince Lombardi, you know, being a football player. I would think that would resonate with him, and it seemed to definitely resonate with him. So I think that's awesome that I was able to let Joe know that he was not aware that he shared the same birthday with Vince Lombardi. So that was my Joe Montana story. Nice guy, awesome moment to meet who I think is still the greatest quarterback of all time. Yes, I know everyone's going to counter with Brady, especially where I live in New England, where they have Brady blinders on. And I'm not ever trying to knock Brady, but I just tell people, look, if I'm starting a football team, you know, and I could pick from any players of all time, my quarterback's Joe Montana. You can have Brady, I'll take Joe Montana. And that's basically all I say. I'm not trying to knock Brady. I'm just saying that to me, the greatest quarterback of all time is Joe Montana. And obviously you can debate Brady all you want, and I'll give you that. But I'm taking Joe. You can have Brady. That's all I say. All right. So next guy up, and this is really why the whole day dragged on, was Bo Jackson. And Bo Jackson, I waited in line. Most of these guys are waiting in line for anywhere between a half an hour to probably half an hour would be most. Some of them, they're basically on schedule, you know. And the photo op lines were not nearly as long as the autograph lines. It appeared most people wanted autograph things from these players, which makes sense. But I just happened to already have every one of their autographs. So I just wanted to take an opportunity to meet them and get a picture taken with them. So I went through the photo booth line. And they were much... they were not nearly as long as the autograph lines. And so, again, I would say anywhere between 15 minutes to a half an hour was the general waiting time for the photo booth lines, except for Bo Jackson. For Bo Jackson, we waited an hour and a half for Bo. And we don't know to this minute, you know, we never found out truly whether he was late getting there or he was apparently signing. We were told that he was signing a bunch of stuff prior to coming out to the photo booth. Like, I guess he just had a bunch of items apparently in the back that he was signing before coming out, and just stuff that he had pre-scheduled or that was pre-ordered for him to sign that has nothing to do with people that were in line to get his autograph after, you know, the photo booth appearance. that's what the rumor was by a couple of the people attending, you know, a couple of the people from TriStar that were, you know, managing and running the event. So whether or not that was true, whatever the case, either he was late or signing stuff, we waited in line for an hour and a half. And again, keep in mind, for people like me who had previous autographs that day, that morning, Montana being one, I was already waiting in line from 10:30. And Joden, I mean, and Bo was scheduled for, I think Bo was scheduled for 12:30, and he didn't come out till like 1:15. So that's a lot of line waiting and standing in line. Now, went up to Bo. Bo came out, finally. And for me, you know, to meet Bo Jackson, he was one of the ones that I certainly wanted to meet. Being that, to me, he's one of the greatest, probably the greatest athlete of the the last 50, 60 years, maybe more. Certainly in my lifetime. And so he was one of the ones that I certainly wanted to meet. So anyway, Bo came out, and he was, again, you know, outside of Winfield, he was probably the second most, I don't know if disappointing is the right word to use, because, again, I was just disappointed because he wasn't able to, sorry, I just got distracted. I had a text come in from work. So I wasn't able to, I guess he didn't meet my expectations as far as being personable. Bo Jackson was very similar to Dave, where there was actually a rumor that he was going to wear a mask as well for the photo op. And most of us in the line were like, oh, you got to be kidding me. After waiting this long, Bo Jackson's going to come out in a mask. And they even announced it, that he was going to be wearing a mask. So we're like, are you kidding me? Like, most of us were like, maybe we should just go get our money back. But Bo came out, and he had his mask on, got in, you know, in the photo area, and had it on, and then he took it off. So, and when he did, we kind of, like, applauded and said, all right, Bo, you know. Like, what's the point of having a photo op if he's going to have his mask on? So he did take it off, thankfully. And but he was also, you know, I guess COVID cautious or whatever, and he would not shake hands with anybody. He was doing the fist bumps as well, just like Winfield was. But one thing with Bo is, unlike Winfield, who didn't say anything, you know, negative to me, or, you know, Bo did have a comment where he said, because I just, again, when I went up to these guys, I was like, pleasure to meet you. How you doing? That type of thing. And he asked me how I was doing. And I said, good, how are you? And then after the picture was taken, I said to him, you know, because I always try to get something, you know, I always try to get a word in, really what my primary thoughts are. And I just said to him, and I said, it's a pleasure to be standing next to the greatest athlete in the last 50 plus years. And he said something to me, like, even before I was finished, he's like, come on, man, let's go, or something like that. And I'm like, okay, he's not interested in having any additional chatter. Now, he wasn't being a dick, but he was just, you know, but he was just kind of, come on, man, let's go, you know, type of thing. So he didn't really want to have a fan being a fanboy, fanboying him, I guess. So, you know, I get that. I racked it up to another little slightly disappointing encounter with Bo. But, you know, maybe he was having a rough day. He was already late as it was. And, yeah, I guess you can't expect these guys to be as well, you can't. You really, these guys are not excited to meet you. I mean, let's think about it, really. I mean, they're there to get their pictures taken, sign some autographs. They get a paycheck, of course, because, you know, all these encounters, you know, cost us money as fans. So that's what I'm like, you know, you can at least be personable. And I'm not trying to say they were being a jerk. None of them were. Even Winfield and Bo Jackson, they were not. It's just that they were not as happy, I guess, or pleasant to as the others that I mentioned, to meet their fans and you know, people that paid to meet them. All right, now to Randall Cunningham. I know I'm a half hour in. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this. It's a little bit of a side subject matter. Then we'll get to training camp, I promise. Was Randall Cunningham. Now, growing up, I watched the entire career of Randall Cunningham. Loved Randall Cunningham. He probably is my favorite. And I say probably because McNabb's right there with him. It's kind of neck and neck. But at the end of the day, as far as, you know, I'm not going to say who's better because I know who's better. I've already had that discussion on here. But I think my favorite quarterback of all time is Randall Cunningham, if I had to pick one or the other. And so to meet Randall, who I had a poster of in my room growing up on my wall, and was the league's first ultimate weapon. For those of you who may be young out there, you know, he made the Sports Illustrated cover, and they called him the ultimate weapon on Sports Illustrated. So, you know, he had made quite an impact back then and was an exciting player, the most exciting player in football back then. It was probably between him and Barry Sanders, honestly. So Cunningham, obviously playing quarterback, was, you know, more of a featured player at the time. Not to take anything away from Barry Sanders, of course. But during, you know, Randall's prime years, he was like the show. And as an Eagle fan, it was great to have Randall Cunningham as your quarterback. So watched his entire career. I mean, from the days he started taking over and coming in for third down for Ron Jaworski, that's how they kind of brought Randall along, is Jaworski and him were split time. Jaworski was basically the starting quarterback, but on third downs, they would bring in Randall Cunningham on third down, and Jaworski would come off the field. And that's how Randall's career got started. And then ultimately he took over and was the starter at that point afterwards for the Eagles. So to meet Randall Cunningham was just like, wow. And I have his autographs. I picked another one up at the show, as a matter of fact, ironically. Not from him directly, but I bought a card with his autograph on it at the show. And it was actually the day before I met Randall. So anyway, let's just get into the meeting. So I was in line to meet Randall, and again, he came out. He was all dressed up, too. He was in a suit and tie. The only athlete that I saw that was in a full suit and tie. Now, I'm sure there could have been others, because there was 100-something athletes there, and I certainly didn't see all of them. But he was very dressed up. Suit and tie, came out, and I walked up to him. I had my Eagles jersey on for that day. I specifically wanted that. I was wearing a Brian Dawkins Eagles jersey, and because I wanted Randall to know that I was an Eagles fan. Like when I had obviously that day when I went up with Montana and Bo Jackson, I had that same Eagles jersey on. So I was not in 49er garb or Raiders garb or whatever for those other two, nor would I, because I'm not a fan of those teams. But with Randall, that's why I wore the jersey, because I wanted Randall to know that I'm an Eagle fan. And so I went up to Randall, and I said, you know, something like, Randall, this is awesome, you know, longtime fan. And he's like, how you doing, man? And I'm like, good. Shook my hand. And was he a fist bumper too? I think Randall might have been a fist bumper also. Can't remember. He might have been fist bump also. I can't remember if I was able to shake his hand or fist bump. Either way, you know, shook his hand or fist bumped him and got a picture taken. And it's funny, apparently when we were getting my picture taken, you know, I sucked in my gut, or he made mention, he's like, you're sucking in your gut, and I'm trying to straighten up or something like that. He was just kind of joking about how he's kind of making reference how he was out of shape. Now, he's not as out of shape as I am. I mean, he's definitely kept himself in better condition than I have, you know, as he's gotten older. I mean, I need to drop some LBs. COVID's not been good to me. But Randall, I mean, he still looks in real good shape. I mean, obviously he's not as thin as he was when he played. None of us are. But he made kind of a joke about that. It was kind of funny. So Randall was very pleasant, very easygoing, kind of what I expected. And to meet Randall Cunningham, I mean, as an Eagle fan, does it get any better than that? That was awesome. So that was my experience meeting those Eagles. And let's get into training camp, you know. Sorry I'm 35 minutes in, but I'm hoping that you enjoyed, you know, a little bit of what I bring to the show and meeting those Eagle greats and being able to share with you and those even the all-time greats like Joe Montana, Bo Jackson, Dave Winfield, those guys. Hopefully you enjoyed some of that. But I had to talk about it because it was a big deal for me, and it is Eagles related and sports related, so I wanted to share that with you. Okay. let's get to what I've heard, the little bits and pieces coming out of training camp so far. Let's talk about Jalen Hurts. Now, as you all know, what my concerns about Jalen Hurts are. Now, I never know who's tuning in to my show for the first time and who's been listening to my show all along or halfway in between or whatever. So I'm going to repeat myself as to what my concerns are about Jalen Hurts. And they are that when he rolls out to the right almost all the time and rarely throws down the left side of the field, rarely throws over the middle side of the field, and basically everything that he does successfully is rolling out to the right. And the fact that he leaves the pocket too soon, where he sees phantom rushes. Those are two of my biggest concerns. So not able to read defenses, always running over to the right, and leaving a pocket. Maybe there's three concerns. And his accuracy, those type of things. So these are the things that I mentioned last podcast, that I want to focus on this camp. And early on, we're not off to a good start, folks. And I'm concerned about that. I'm not going to go crazy about it, but I'm concerned because, you know, all you heard about this offseason is that he's been working on these things, and then he's at least right now, early on in camp, doing the same things. And that's concerning me a lot. All right? But I'm not going to go and thinking it's over with and Hurts is never going to be good. I'm not going to go make those quantum leaps. But it's concerning to me because these are the things early on in camp that I wanted to see improvement or hear about improvements from Hurts. And as of right now, this day, August 1st, I can't say, based on what reports I'm hearing, again, I'm not seeing this with my own eyes either. You know, there's no video of so I'm just going on what the reporters that are at the site, the Jeff Moshers, the Jeff, I forget what the other Jeff's name is, that is a beat writer. For those of you in Philly, you'll know who I'm talking about. You know, the Adam Kaplan's, the ones that are allowed on the field, Ruben Frank, Dave Singero, all these guys, right? These guys are know the Eagles and they're on the field. And all of them have been talking about this last week and over the weekend where Hurts, you know, he's thrown three interceptions already. And, again, this is not live action play. It's like 8-on-8 drills or 11-on-11s or whatever. He's thrown three interceptions. And a couple of the plays, one of them I heard was he was rolling to his left. So I'm glad that he's at least rolling to his left. That was a positive, I guess. But on that play, he threw it across his body and he got picked off. And they said it was a horrible decision. I mean, that was the word they used, horrible decision. Now, I didn't see the play, and we'll probably never see the play. But that type of reporting from me and hearing about that is really concerning. Like, he cannot do that. Now, he was also picked off over the middle, which, again, that's another area I knew he needs to work on. So I guess I should be happy that he's at least attempting to throw to the left and over the middle. That's good, but I'd much rather prefer to hear that he's completing these passes than throwing it to the defense. So bottom line is, the early reports on Hurts so far is he's not playing all that great. So take that for what it's worth. I'm not trying to bash him, as you know. I'm rooting for Hurts. But it's just that it seems, at least right now, and I know it's super, super early in camp, that these issues that I've had and my concerns with Hurts are trickling and transferring into this year, and that's just not a good thing. Not good early reports. I'll just leave it at that. Linebacker reports, on the other hand, are sounding very good. Like, there's been very high praise of Davion Taylor, you know, to the point where I don't remember who it was, one of those guys I mentioned, said that he's been the best, you know, linebacker out there so far in camp, you know, Davion Taylor. And, you know, we know the guy's got ability. He's just been unable to stay healthy. But that's awesome if he's been the best linebacker out there so far, considering, you know, and they also said high things to say, really good things to say about Kazir White, which you guys know what I think about him. and N'Kobe Dean. They were talking about how N'Kobe Dean may not even get, you know, because of these other linebackers playing so well, that we might not, you know, there's, it's almost like been predetermined that N'Kobe Dean's going to come in here and be a starting linebacker. And, you know, the point is, the way that they're making is the way Damian Taylor is starting camp right now, and Kazir White, that it might be hard to get N'Kobe Dean on the field. And because T.J. Edwards is a guy that, you know, let's face it, he played really well last year. He may not be great in coverage, but he's very, very solid and really solidified that linebacker crew for us last year once he took over as starter. So, you know, the point is that, and it's not only that N'Kobe Dean's not playing well, it's just that it may be tough as a rookie for him to crack the starting lineup. And to me, that would be a good problem. Now, I'd love to see N'Kobe Dean out there, don't get me wrong, but I'm perfectly content. You know, if Damian Taylor and Kazir White, you know, are their starters, you know, with T.J. Edwards in the middle, I'd be okay with that. And then, you know, as the season goes on, you know, they'll just keep incorporating N'Kobe Dean in there and let him just, you know, take his time growing into position. Because I do think eventually N'Kobe Dean will be the starting linebacker on this team. But I don't think it has to happen this year. There's nothing there's no written rule that says that he needs to be a starting linebacker this year. So I'm excited to hear what I'm hearing from the linebackers. Very excited. So last thing is something I've been touching on quite a bit is Miles Sanders. And the other thing that came out was one of the practice days, Miles Sanders was working with the second string and not with the first string. And that Kenneth Gainwell was out on the first string, with the first string guys. Now, Sirianni addressed it, saying that it just happened to be that the way the rotation was that day or something. Like, they don't really pay much attention to that. Like, it's just the way that the rotation was that day. Don't read too much into it. Miles Sanders is our guy. Blah, 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 blah. And, of course, Miles had to, you know, face all these questions and how he thought about it and all this. And you can tell Miles has got a, you know, he's getting a little chippy about it, you know. And I don't blame him, because if I was Miles Sanders, I would be super frustrated. He gets criticized because he didn't score a lot of touchdowns last year, or he didn't score any touchdowns last year. But meanwhile, the overlooked stat is how many touchdowns that Jalen Hurts took inside the 2-yard line. And I mentioned that before. I mean, he had like, what did he have, 10 touchdowns last year? And most of those are inside the 5. So those are all touches taken away from Sanders. You know, Sanders could easily had 5 of those, half of those touchdowns. I mean, the guy averaged 5.5 yards per carry last year. You don't think he can get a couple yards to score? I mean, so the fans that are sitting there criticize Sanders for not scoring touchdowns last year just don't know what they're talking about. You know, they just don't. You know, it's sometimes Eagle fans just are so frustrating to talk to. So, you know, look, it's not just the stats all the time. Sometimes you got to read in between the lines. And Eagle fans fail to do that. Just look at the stat. They get stuck on, you know, all Sanders, yeah, he's, you know, we use Gainwell more. Sanders, don't re-sign him. You know, he can't score touchdowns. I'm like, dude, this guy averages 5.5 yards carry. You don't think he scores touchdowns? I mean, use your head. Sometimes just like, just think. Please, just think. And then just look at Jalen. And he had 10 rushing touchdowns. And most of them, if not all of them, were inside the 10-5-yard line. I don't remember him having any long touchdown runs last year. I remember a lot of goal line sneaks, 1 or 2 yard, you know, keepers. Remember a lot of that. And you're telling me Sanders couldn't hand it off and he could have got it? So it's a lot of it's Jalen calling his own number. But you're going to blame Sanders because he didn't score many touchdowns last year. Trust me, I knew that. I am my fantasy team. You don't have to tell me. So Sanders, I like how he's got an edge on him. Like, I really think you're going to see, and I hope they give him the ball. Give him the damn ball. But I think you're going to see a really good Miles Sanders this year. I really do. I like when players have an edge to them. And I can kind of see that Sanders, hopefully he doesn't put too much pressure on himself. That's my probably my only concern. I just want him to do what we know we can do. So that's it. We're 45 minutes in. That's all I really wanted to talk about. I did hear, you know, some of the players come out with their press conference today. And I saw some pretty neat. I heard some pretty neat things. Like, what's really promising to me is at least Sirianni knows about the 3 Jalen interceptions, and he criticized him. Like he said, you know, he can't be doing this, can't be doing that. You know, he made a bad decision. He said he made 2 out of 3 interceptions. He flat out said that Jalen made bad decisions. So I'm glad that Sirianni knows that. I'm sure he's telling Jalen that so they can really address this. I'm kind of glad in a way that Jalen has thrown these early interceptions because, and especially hearing Sirianni address it in the media today about them being bad decisions, you know, that they can work on it right now. Because apparently it doesn't seem like he was doing much work on it during this offseason, as we kept hearing, if he's still making the same mistakes. Maybe he just, you know, that could be just hearsay, and they said that Jalen was really working on those things. Who knows? Bottom line is he's already been throwing in a lot of interceptions and throwing across his body and making bad decisions. Get them all out of the system now. Address them now. I know Jalen will work on it. I've said this all along. I know that Jalen will work on this stuff. He's not a lazy player. I think he works his ass off and he takes it seriously. So that's why I'm liking the fact that, you know, what I heard from Sirianni today, even though, you know, you hate hearing that your quarterback's having these kind of decision-making struggles, but I'd rather him do it now. Sirianni, hearing him and knowing that he knows that those are bad decisions, saying it right to the media, not trying to sugarcoat it. I mean, he came out and said these were bad decisions by Jalen Hurts. I like that. And so if he's telling it to the media, you know he's telling it to Jalen, you know. So props to Sirianni. Hopefully we'll see some improvement out of Hurts going forward. I expect it to be. I don't, you know, everyone's going to have some bad days. I mean, this is a good Eagles defense too. Keep that in mind. The Eagles defense this year is going to be damn good. So, again, I don't want to give too much of a cushion to Hurts because you know that I have these concerns. And hearing that he's still doing the same stuff is very frustrating for me. But he is playing against good defense at the same time. And this is early on in camp. So hopefully he can address it. With that being said, thank you again for tuning in to Philadelphia Eagles Talk with Jeff. Remember, you can email the program at petwg@gmail.com. Thank you again for tuning in to Philadelphia Eagles Talk with Jeff. Until next time, fly Eagles fly, take care of yourselves, and we'll be back. Make sure you follow the program. We'll see you next time. Take care.